tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey there, Sword Art Online fans! Feliz Dia de los Muertos a todos! Thank you so much, guys! We are here! We are at the end of the Phantom Bullet arc! How are you guys feeling tonight? That's one way to put it, yes.
Yeah. Also very satisfied because I don't think we've ever called anything quite this thoroughly.
I know.
Thank you, Steven.
Why did you have that cued?
He's like, it's my ringtone.
Oh, because he's Steven.
Yeah,
this is actually worse without the image.
Yeah, super bad. Steven cut the audio. It's pretty terrible.
No, Steven, that's enough. Seriously.
Anyway, also, we can't understand it. It's in Japanese.
We're just going to have the next 10 minutes of this guy freaking out in the background.
Can we get to the part where Kirito kicks him in the face? Because that was pretty great.
It sounds like it's like a loop. I think it's a loop, guys.
It was a loop.
Oh, for God's sake.
That makes sense. But anyway.
For 10 hours.
Anyway.
Probably.
Joining me on the panel tonight, Tari Miller. Katie Cullen. We've got Stephen Lemieux in the booth on the ones and twos. And or right here in the studio. And I'm your host, Megan Salinas. Guys, yeah, I think that basically sums it up. We called it. We called it, and we're awesome.
The phone.
No more! We're done with that.
Dude, I will come in the booth and knock you over.
If we're going to do that, then you need to pull up audio cues from Scream and play some Roger Jackson in here.
Do you like scary movies?
What's your favorite? Anyway.
I'm more of a puzzle game person.
Guys,
goodbye forever.
I'm really, like, all jokes aside and all creepiness aside, thank you for that.
Yeah, that was messed up.
This was probably the most satisfying end to an arc that we've gotten in Sword Art Online. And I'll be honest, this is one of the most satisfying ends to any arc I've ever seen in anime.
And now Steven! We have that video.
Steven!
Done.
Get it together, Steven!
That's gonna
Steven,
be
Steven, do
episode,
I have to come
guys.
Into that booth?
Get out now. I told you, I'm gonna go into that booth and I'm gonna knock you over and we are gonna have a repeat of what happened on Ruby last week.
Can I just say how weird his teeth are?
He's got really weird teeth.
Yeah.
Anyway, Steven, when you're done playing that on a loop, I'd like to actually talk about the episode.
Yeah,
because
that'd be
it's
great.
Pretty great.
Steven, it's no longer funny.
Thank you, Steven. Anyway. So, guys, we start off exactly where we left off, with Kirito getting his butt handed to him in the middle of the fight. And as he's fighting, Sinon, I almost called her Asada because we've been screaming Asada-san for the last 10 minutes.
We have.
Well, Sinon is looking on, and she's like, I wish I could help because her scope is broken. She's still got her gun intact, but obviously from this, she's going to have a lot harder time aiming. And it's in the middle of a fight, so chances are Kirito could get hit as well. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a problem. But as they're fighting, Kirito has another convenient flashback. And I do have...
That is what they are, isn't it?
Yeah, and I do have a little bit of an issue with this. Just because I feel like they could have laid the groundwork a little bit better, because the way Sword Art Online was presented to us and the way this particular arc was presented to us, unless you read the light novels, there was literally no way to guess who it was. Because we didn't have this guy's name. And so the only way we could find out who he was is if Kirito remembered it, or if this guy said, oh, by the way, I'm so-and-so. So I have a little bit of issue with that, because I like my mysteries to give me enough pieces at the middle to where everything makes sense when you come together.
They don't say his name in the light novels.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, there's no mention of this event in the light novels until now in the show.
Okay, so it really is.
So it really was shoddy workmanship.
Well, no, and again, I can understand the flip side argument, because this was a repressed memory. So I do get that as well, but the murder mystery side, the murder mystery fan of me goes, come on, you should have given us something to be able to piece it all together. I don't know, what do you guys think?
Well, but he wasn't an established character. I could see if it was the guy who was wielding the knife in the first arc, where you're like, okay, we've seen this guy, we know about him. But this it's like, all right. The mystery is as much mystery to Kirito as it is to us. So it's like, I guess I feel it more through him, as opposed to being like, all right, I gotta piece these puzzles together.
Well, they did it the same as Sugu. Is you didn't meet Sugu until that one point in the story, and they introduce him. And this is the same way. You create the history through flashbacks, and you create the history through how the character interacts with the other characters.
Well, honestly, I think the one way they could have fixed this is right now they added this flashback of the debriefing before they went, or the briefing rather, before they went in to go take on Laughing Coffin, and we saw the chart of all of the known identities, et cetera, et cetera. If they'd had that part of the flashback with the actual flashback that we saw way back when as well, that at least would have laid some of the groundwork. So we could at least have a flash of, it could be all of these people.
Yeah.
And then Kirito remembering it again and going, oh, that guy, as opposed to, we're meeting now for the very first time.
Yeah, and again, I can understand both sides of it, because again, repressed memory, and so there's going to be a lot of, you know, unreliable memory issues there, because obviously this was a very traumatic event. But again, just that part of me that loves Agatha Christie novels and everything like that, it's nice to be able to put everything together. That being said, Kirito is able to remember, and it ends up being a member of Laughing Coffin named Red-Eyed Zaza. That is a dumb name, Death Gun. Death Gun is a way better name. Does anybody know what Red-Eyed Zaza means? Because that's just silly.
It sounds like just a plain old username. Like, you're like, all right, my character has red eyes, and Za and Za. That sounds cool.
To be fair, he might have not started off as a psychopath.
And I have to wonder if the characters that they use to write Zaza mean anything, because that's not something we have in English. A is A is A, full stop, done. But your characters that make up a word can be broken down into their individual meanings. You can write one name 5 or 10 different ways depending on the characters that you use.
Oh, no,
so,
and right. We saw that
Zaza
with
means yeah. something else.
What, and we saw that with Musketeer X, you know, a couple episodes ago. You know, there are a number of different things. And even Sturban, you know, we didn't realize that. But yeah. So Red-Eyed Zaza, unless Zaza means something really cool, I think it's a pretty silly name.
In Muppet Treasure Island, when they're doing the roll call of all the pirates. Old Tom, real old Tom, dead Tom, red-eyed Zaza. Doesn't it sound like that?
It could very well be a Muppet character. Okay, yeah. I'll go with that.
He's a Muppet pirate.
Well, anyway, Kirito is able to remember it, and that causes this guy to hesitate. And while he's hesitating, our good friend Sinon is able to get a bullet line on him, and he tries dodging, and that's when Kirito is able to attack and be able to take this guy out. He cuts him in half.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Is it just me, or did that part of the fight really not last very long?
It was well animated. It was great. Yeah. But, I mean, this is something we see a lot in anime and a lot in Sword Art Online, is we leave on a cliffhanger, and then the big climactic fight is over relatively quickly.
Yeah. That's true.
Go ahead.
I was saying, and he said all he needed was, like, a minute, or a second, just to, like, get an opening, and then he entered God mode, and it was over from that point on.
And Shonen protagonist.
And in the real world, we have Asuna and Yui holding his hand at the hospital, which was really sweet. It's very cute. I am still a little bit annoyed that, you know,
where did she go? Where did she go?
Wait, what?
Asuna. And the next part, Kirito runs over to the...
Oh, the next
Where's
part.
Where's Asuna?
Okay. Ah! Carne Asada-san. For those of you listening to the podcast, Steven did a Photoshop of Shinkawa looking at Carne Asada and screaming, Carne Asada-san.
Steven, no.
That is a much funnier joke than playing it on a loop. I can appreciate that one. Because Carne Asada sounds delicious.
It really is.
Steven.
Oh, and Katie's face palming. Anyway, so before he goes, before he's pronounced dead, you know, basically Death Gun, I almost called him Death Note, but Death Gun is basically telling Kirito that it's not over. You know, that he, you know, just because he thinks he's won, it doesn't mean it's, you know, it doesn't mean he's actually won. And so he and Sinon have a moment to talk, and, you know, this is a victory. This is great for them.
Though there's probably still a killer standing over your comatose body right now. So when you wake up, be careful.
Yeah, theoretically, right. The guy has gone. Theoretically. But that's still not super, it's still not super comforting.
There's this phenomenon known as sour grapes.
Yeah. And that's definitely a drawback to this kind of victory, is that she's not necessarily safe when she wakes up. But they are the two remaining tournament players. And so instead of deciding to fight one another for the tournament title, Sinon basically decides that it wouldn't be worth it to beat Kirito in this state because he's been beaten to hell and back. And so she's like, you know what? Let's call it a draw, and we'll fight. We'll duke it out again at the next one. And I really liked that. And
it's
like
the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciated this entire sequence, just the way she contributed in the fight, and the way that they come to this, you know, agreement. I really, it's just a lot of mutual respect on both their parts.
And she never fell in love with him.
And she hasn't fallen in love with him. And I love that mutual respect. I feel like it's undermined a lot by the fan service that they do in, you know, the past couple episodes, which is kind of the frustrating thing, is because it's like you go from treating this character with so much respect
to showing
lots and lots of shots of her ass. And yeah, it's so frustrating, but in this particular moment, I was wholly satisfied with the way they handled this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Is that really all you got?
I went off on a rant there. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
You've summed it up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sorry, guys.
No, that's what you're here for. But yeah, it was really good. Like, it really was touching. Just like that last moment where she hugs him and then they blow up.
Yeah.
She pulls out a grenade and Kirito's like, what? 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 Tosses it to him, and he's doing the whole juggling, my competence is gone for comedy, what do I do?
Right.
Grabs him, hugs him with the grenade between him, it blows both of them up, and so they are co-winners.
Yeah. And it's a tie, and I really appreciate that, you know.
It's like soccer. You can tie, and it counts.
Yep. And so they're both the champions. Although Kirito has forfeited his winnings because he never put in his personal information.
Which was probably smart because there was a guy murdering people.
Yeah.
But that means Sinon gets the winnings.
Yay!
And the government's paying Kirito anyway.
Yeah.
Hopefully a lot. So
I would hope so. But basically, she logs out, and we have this really well-done sequence where she goes through her apartment very meticulously, looking for someone who might have been hiding somewhere. And again, we get back into scary movie territory, and this whole sequence, it was very, very nerve-wracking.
The animation style changes.
Yeah. It's very well rendered, and everything is... It's photorealistic, essentially. Which is
creepy.
Great. Yeah.
Really creepy.
Yeah, it adds
really
so much to the tension, and I feel like Ghostface is going to pop out at any second. He's going to pop out of the closet somewhere.
I'm in the house.
Pretty much. Pretty much. And
what door am I at?
Your call. Anyway. For those of you who haven't seen Scream, go see Scream.
For those of you who haven't seen Scream, yeah, we've pretty much spoiled it in our discussions of this, but you still need to see it.
And we're not going to stop.
No.
It's over 10 years old. Go see it if you haven't seen it already. But anyway.
Go see all of them. Drink heavily through the third one, and then watch the fourth, because it's actually good.
But anyway, going back to
unless you're underage, don't drink at all.
As you know, as she's basically come to the conclusion that there's no one there when she gets someone at the door, and it turns out it's her good buddy
Candygram.
Shinkawa.
Yeah.
Oh, Shinkawa, or as we've been calling him for weeks, Billy Loomis. And
to the point where they're interchangeable at this point.
They really are. It's kind of unnerving, although Shinkawa, when he's pretending to be supportive, is actually way more supportive. Shinkawa's a lot better about putting on a good face than Billy was.
Well, and the music department for Scream always put the scare chord over Billy showing up on screen. They put it over all sorts of people, mind you, but it was always, always on Billy when he'd just pop in from the side of the screen and go, hi!
Hi!
Shinkawa doesn't get the scare chords. The music department isn't quite that obvious
but
this time.
Again, this was a very well-done scene with very good build-up because he comes in congratulating her. He's you know, pretending to be so happy for his friend. And then, you know, as they're talking, he's like, hey, you promised, you know, remember? Now that you're the winner, I get to be your boyfriend, right? And she's like, buddy, pal, friend.
What part of I need time do you not understand? It's been like 4 hours.
And then what we see is basically just this guy coming completely unhinged. We see him basically pull out the syringe and basically hold it to her and basically go, hey, look, don't move, or I'm going to inject you with this, and you will die.
Yeah.
And it's this really futuristic plastic syringe. It's not the big glass tube with needle that we come to expect. It's this little triangular thing that fits in your pocket.
And actually, they throw in like a little moment that was actually something that passed completely under our radar. His father wants him to be a doctor. And so his family works at a hospital, so he has access to chemicals and all sorts of other things that other people wouldn't have access to.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we've been pointing at him going, he's Billy Loomis, that slipped completely from my mind.
Because it was when they were doing character development within the first couple of episodes that came up when they were sitting down at the Sunday shop or whatever.
Yeah.
Having a drink.
Yeah, and I hadn't started suspecting him at that point. Tari, you were right on.
From the beginning. I know. There goes your little breadcrumb that you wanted.
Yeah, and that is exactly it. That was another point, because it's like that's something that lays the groundwork for what we get later, and it makes sense when it comes together. See, this is exactly what I'm talking about.
There you go.
It's right under your nose.
Yeah, but we have that, and just watching this guy slowly go insane, it was terrifying, and it was like a scary movie. And for those... And this is my thing. A lot of people really were completely fine with the second arc and the villain coming unhinged in the second arc. I disagree. This is how you do it. This is how you do it right.
Because when he goes after her, it's framed as, no, this is creepy and terrifying and wrong, and not, well, this is the plot device that we're using this on.
As opposed to, this is Asuna, this is the doll of Asuna that we are going to sell at lots of places.
Oh,
which,
man.
Yeah, that's really frustrating.
That was really bad.
It was a marketing tool. So shame on you, SAO2. Shame on you, SAO. SAO2 got it right. But anyway, seeing him come unhinged, she's terrified, obviously.
She thinks.
So we see her retreat into herself, and she's like, you know, I don't want to feel anything, you know, I'm just... And she's just hiding, because if she hides, she can pretend like it doesn't exist. But that's when we see her alter ego sit on there and go, look, we've always fought only for ourselves. If this guy kills us, there's nothing to stop him and his accomplices from going after Kirito. And she's like, just this once, let's fight for someone other than ourselves. And that was so touching and sweet. And again, I think that says a lot about the respect that this character is getting from a storytelling standpoint. It's wonderful. And because we get, and we'll get to it a little bit later, but yeah, his Death Gun's other accomplices are out there still. So
at what point does good old Billy Loomis tell her why he was so attracted to her in the first place?
It was right here. It was right here. It was right before she retreated into herself. The reason
he's so into her because he'd always been fascinated with, you know, this sort of thing. And, oh, everyone
everyone in class knew about the fact that you killed someone, and I decided that was the perfect person for me. You'd actually killed someone in real life. That's awesome.
The one, you know, the one person who fired a gun and took someone's life.
Yeah.
Right.
He thought that was stunningly, terrifyingly attractive and went after her because of it, despite the fact that she's like, I don't want anything to do with it. I want to heal. I want to get past this. And that was why he wanted her in the first place, because she was the only person with actual blood on her hands.
Cuckoo! Yeah. Cuckoo! Cuckoo!
Yeah! He is not balanced. He got problems.
So many problems.
So many problems.
And they explain that because there's a lot of, you know, pressure on him from his family. He didn't give... He threw himself into GGO.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
No, they explain it. They're doing a little bit. It's a lot of him coming unhinged, going, I don't give a damn about the real world. His priorities have gotten mixed up. He cares so much about the virtual world. And it's the real world in his mind that takes the back burner. Right. And that everything that goes on in GGO is what's real and what matters, which is insane. And some of the stuff he says to her is so, it's kind of funny because he's going, let's be reborn in a world like that where we can have adventures and get married and have kids. And you made the good point where it's like, did he just list off the life that, and it's just like, oh, shoot. Yeah, he did.
Reframe it in a different context, and it's creepy.
And it's so creepy. You know, the fact that he wants that and values that more than the real world, values this creepy fantasy.
Let's be real. He would have been in Laughing Coffin if he'd been stuck in SAO.
Yep. Yeah. Runs in the family.
Yeah, apparently.
Because I don't remember if it's here or if it's in the next episode, but basically...
It's later on when they're talking to the minister.
Yeah. But basically, he was related to an SAO survivor. But anyway, when Asada comes back out, back to reality, we see her punch him in the face numerous times. She kicks him and fights, you know, to get away. And I really loved this because it was scary. It showed that she wasn't just going to be a victim. You know, she was still fighting and he was still terrifying. But this is how you do it. This was done true scary movie fashion. I absolutely loved it.
Well, and it's terrifying that for all of the, this happens online, this is all in the online world, this stuff happens in real life.
Yeah.
Whether or not you couch it in the, oh, well, half of it's been happening in GGO and half of it's virtual. Yeah, no, this sort of thing happens in real life a horrifying amount. So that's really viscerally terrifying if you're a woman watching this go down.
Like, right.
Yep. That sure is a thing.
And as he's still attacking her, and, you know, all of a sudden Kirito comes in with a flying kick. It was
pretty.
It was one of the most satisfying
things. She's almost made it to the door.
Yeah.
And is trying to get the chain lock off the door so she can get out.
Right.
And he grabs her and drags her back in.
Yeah, and then we have Kirito do that flying kick, and that's how this episode ends. But again, one of the most satisfying things I've ever seen is just seeing this guy get, first of all, kicked repeatedly by Asada and then kneed in the face by Kirito. That was fantastic.
This is a big swooping entrance.
Leave it to Kirito to make an entrance like that.
Yeah.
So that wraps it up for episode 13. So before we go on to the next episode, I want to talk to you guys really quickly about iTunes. Folks, thank you so, so much. We really appreciate everybody who goes to iTunes to leave a rating and a comment. It really helps us. It helps our entire network when you do. It lets our bosses know that you like the type of show that we are putting on. Attack on Titan just wrapped up. We would love to be doing more shows like this, and the best way to be doing that is to show that this is the type of show that you want to see. And our bosses put on 80 hours of content a week for you for free. So it really means the world when you go to iTunes, you leave a rating, leave a comment. We love hearing from you guys on YouTube as well. It's always so much fun getting to talk to you guys about what you think about this show and about what you think of our crazy, silly theories that turn out to be true.
Hey. Booth guy Steve basically lives here. Make him feel good, okay?
Yeah.
Give us 5 stars because that reflects on him as well as us.
Send me money. I don't know. 5 stars. No, just send me money.
That works.
Just give us 5 stars.
Stars you get on iTunes translates to stars you get in the real world.
No, it doesn't. This isn't GGO.
Yeah, I'll bring him a sheet of those little gold stars that you put on kindergartners' achievements.
You try.
I did a whole agility build.
Dang it.
Better go kill people.
No. You mean online, right?
Crickets.
No.
Anyway.
That got dark.
Yeah. It's Halloween.
That's the summary of this series, of this part of the series.
Cut that out.
Yeah.
Cut that out, Steven.
Give him stars so he doesn't do stuff like that anymore.
Anyway, so that wraps it up for episode 13, and we pick up right where we leave off with episode 14, One Small Step. And I really love that because, again, the first shot that we see is Kirito coming in and kneeing this guy in the face. And they're fighting, you know, Kirito's screaming at Asada to run. And in the skirmish, it looks like Kirito gets injected with this poison. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, terrifies Asada. And she goes, she picks up her boombox.
And it is a boombox, guys. And this is the sort of thing that people in the 80s would carry on their shoulders. It's big.
And I just loved because I see her raise it above her head, and the only thing I can think of to say is, "This is my boombox!" And it comes crashing down on his head, and he's knocked out, down for the count.
See, for me, that's in like Billy Loomis, out like Stu.
Yeah, I always had a thing for you, Asada. In your dreams, and drops the boombox on his head.
Out like Stu.
Pretty much. Again, for
except
anybody
he
who
survived this one.
Yeah.
Without massive cranial trauma, evidently.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Didn't even break his nose.
Yeah, he's still alive, but she goes to check on Kirito.
And who is being all dramatic and, oh, it hurts.
I'm dying.
Yeah. So we rip open his shirt, and there's this little black spot on his chest. Oh, what's that? Oh, I bet it's one of the electrodes from the heart monitor. I guess he tried to inject me there, and it didn't take. Guess I'm not dying. And I'm like, the nurse is useless.
Well, no. I mean, if it wasn't there, he'd be dead now. So Kirito is alive because...
dumb luck.
Because of dumb luck.
And in what world is an... They do little sticky things, and they stick the wire on your chest. It's just... it's like a Band-Aid. How is that going to stop a syringe?
Well, maybe I could... Go ahead.
Oh.
They acted like it was hard plastic.
It might have been, because, I mean, I know some places use the rubber ones. Like, have you ever had back treatment? Doesn't matter.
Electro
back therapy, they use the rubber ones. So it was probably one of those, I'm assuming, because that's the only way it could stop us.
She just left it on there?
Well, no, I would also not put it past him to have literally just jumped up from the bed, grabbed his clothes, and run on out.
Yeah.
Well, Asana just being like...
hi, honey. Bye, honey. I'll talk to you later. Bye. I'll call you soon.
Him. That's what drove me crazy about this scene. Where the hell is Asana? Because she's in the hotel room and wants to wake up. Hi, I gotta go to another girl's house. Bye. Please explain that to her, to your virtual wife and real life girlfriend.
And your virtual Tamagotchi child.
How did she not? She didn't even show up. She nothing. It's like she disappeared from this scene.
It's possible, and I'm going off on a limb, but it's possible that he went ahead and asked her to go ahead and start doing the research on what we end up seeing at the end of this episode.
Right.
So it's possible that he just asked her to go do that, and that they, or that he just said, "Hey, you know, I'll see you at home, or I'll go do something. There's one more thing I've got to take care of."
Right.
I just find it really hard to believe that she would just let him swan off like that.
I mean, she could have been calling the police. I mean, he rides a motorcycle, so there's a chance that he just jumped on there and been like, no time for two people.
I would have loved to have seen her just clobber him when he got back. Where have you been?
Got the little hash, a red mark.
That would have been funny, pretty funny. So, it's one of those things where it's like, I really wish some of these people who were on the sideline this arc could have been a little bit more in the forefront. But still.
Can we stop putting her on the back burner?
Yeah, that would be
nice. It's freaking awesome that they give so much good character development to Asada and that they treat her so well, but can we extend that to the female protagonist we've had since episode
or
two.
Really, just all of our side characters.
Yes.
Because I love the way, and I don't remember who this quote is attributed to, but like really well written side characters think they're the protagonist in their own story.
That's villains.
Well, no, it's same with side characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're absolutely right.
I don't think Klein really has an arc. Let's be real.
But no, that's how you write them.
His story would be kind of boring.
That's how you write them as people.
True.
Yeah, villains think of themselves as the hero of their own story, not necessarily the protagonist. But yeah, that's how you write them as people instead of just people who exist to support the lead.
Right.
Yeah, which is a lot of what is that's something we get a lot in anime. I'm going off on a lot of tangents. I apologize
that's
this
okay.
evening.
It's anime
it's
theory,
good stuff.
Story stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, so I do love this moment of like the two of them because she's the immediate reaction from her is, you are so lucky. It's ridiculous. but it is very sweet. Again, that they get to meet in real life, even though he's really, really dumb but lucky.
Yeah. And we didn't have to cart Kirito back to the hospital.
Yeah, that's definitely a plus.
Nurse is like, you've been gone for 5 minutes. What did you do?
Yeah.
Nearly got murdered.
And so that wraps up, you know, the climax, I suppose, of this particular arc. And so what we get left is our epilogue, essentially. And I don't know how many days after it is, but, you know, we have Asada there, and she's being confronted by those same bullies from the beginning. I think it was from episode 3?
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that. But it's these same bullies. And one of these girls has the effing nerve to actually pull a gun.
I think it's an airsoft gun.
It was a BB gun.
It doesn't matter.
It's still something
that
fires projectiles.
Yeah, yeah. You hold a BB gun up that close to someone's face, it can definitely do some damage.
Well, shoot your eye out, kid.
Exactly. Freaking dumb kids. Anyway.
It's not a Red Ryder rifle, but yeah. Hey, close enough.
But yeah, so she refuses to give them money and, you know, refuses to, you know, take part in their bullying anymore. This girl pulls this little BB gun, airsoft gun, whatever it was on her, and pulls the trigger so we know she would have fired it directly at Asada's face. But, you know, it's not working.
And in one last Scream reference, it works better when the safety's not on.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Well, this isn't really, here's what it is. Here's the make and model. This isn't really my style, but takes the safety off, shoots a can at 30 yards. It works. Clicks the safety back on. Here you go. The bullies are just like, what?
So much so that they collapse to the ground because they're like, oh my gosh, I was just pointing a gun at somebody who's killed people before.
She could have killed us. Well, you probably could have killed her if you weren't too dumb to take the safety off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dumb, dumb kids. But
who will probably never do that again.
Yes. And so, but what I really liked about this moment is that after she walks away, we do see her kind of start to hyperventilate a little bit, and she has to lean against the wall and go, it was a small step, and then pick herself back up and go on, because that shows that she's not completely over it. It's not just like, oh, I had this adventure, and now everything is fine. No, it's something that she's still going to have to live with. It's still something she's going to have to wrestle with, but she's making progress.
Yeah. She turned a corner.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, she's come, like, leaps and bounds from where she started, not being able to just look at a finger gun to, like, being able to actually handle it in the real world. So I was, like, clapping my fingers off.
Yeah.
I was, too. Are you doing this?
Yes. That's how I clap. Yeah.
But, no, it is something you do want to just stand up and clap because it's like, you show them, Asada. That was great. But again, it's a little... Not in my movie. Yeah. But it is a little bit more realistic, too, because, again, something like that is never really going to fully go away.
Yeah.
It's always going to be a part of her, and that's okay. And so, who is there to pick her up from school but Kirito?
On his motorcycle.
Right.
I was like, look at that guy. Isn't he cool? I wonder what he's doing for. And she's just like, we could have met somewhere else. We didn't have to do that here.
And fine, everyone's
I'll get
like,
on. Let's
ooh,
go.
Asada, is that your boyfriend? Oh, my God.
And she's just like,
I hate you.
I really hate you right now.
So they drive on over to the minister's, and that's where we get a lot of the explanation for what was going on. And we find out that Shinkawa, his older brother, was not only an SAO survivor, but obviously a member of Laughing Coffin.
Red Eye Zaza.
Yeah, exactly. And that actually, originally, it was Shinkawa as Death Gun
in the game,
in the game with during that cafe scene at the very beginning, and they started orchestrating this whole thing, like just them talking about it. It's probably very similar to, you know, the way real life shootings go on. It just starts off as, you know,
an idea,
you know, and then they start to talk about it, and then they start to get more serious with it, and it just progresses from there. And then there was another member of Laughing Coffin that they pulled into it as well. I don't remember the guy's name.
Did he have a name?
He did. He was the guy who wore like a black
bag
over his head.
Don't look at the knife users. Horrible.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but
it just started because Shinkawa was pissed off at that guy for saying, "Oh yeah, this build is the way to go. This build is the way to go." Just kidding. It was actually this build the whole time, and now I'm better than all of you. And Shinkawa, living his life in GGO and taking this guy's advice and being so ticked off that, oh, by the way, he wasn't exactly telling the truth there. Like, well, now he has to die.
Right.
Like in the real world.
It's like,
actually die.
It's like if someone gave you insider information on stocks and...
Which is illegal to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, of course. But that's essentially the thought behind the whole
Since real
process.
Money is at stake in GGO, that is not a bad analogy.
Yeah. But I feel like the money wasn't a thing for Shinkawa. He would have been happy to be stuck in SAO, let's be real.
Yeah. And again, that kind of makes sense because his brother, probably from his eyes, you know, lived this adventure, you know, where that's so fantasy different from the real world, but it was real for all intents and purposes. It was real for this guy. And we also get a little bit of backstory that the older brother was actually very sickly, and so their father basically passed, you know, down the responsibility of, okay, well, you become a doctor. You're the one that's eventually going to take over
the family hospital.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that puts a lot of pressure on the younger brother, you know, and probably disheartens the older brother. But strangely enough, that never affected their relationship. They were still close. But it probably caused a lot of animosity between them and their father.
Yeah. Bonded by murder.
But yeah, and so they bring in this other member of Laughing Coffin. So the brothers are both incarcerated, but this other guy is still on the loose.
Yeah.
Presumably, they'll be able to track him down, but it's one of those things where it's like, he's still out there.
I'd imagine there are quite a few members of Laughing Coffin who are still out there.
Yeah.
And just not making as big a splash as these guys did in GGO.
Honestly, prior to this, I thought it was every surviving member of Laughing Coffin back. But
yeah.
I guess maybe not all of them are as petty as that. Maybe with some of them being back in the real world, they're like, no, dudes, we have to lay low.
Yeah. There are actual consequences here.
We don't want people to know that we murdered people, and it's like watching people do this in GGO going, oh my god.
But
damn it, Zozo's at it again.
I was really surprised to find out that there were only three of them, because after we started calling it Scream, we started speculating that there were multiple people, you know, waiting at numerous homes, and really it was only two at a time.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the only few aspects that we were off on, and the other one was that we thought they were a member of the Japanese translation, the Japanese servers for the game, and that didn't come up at all.
But it is interesting because Asada, you know, she's still asking about Shinkawa because he's making a recovery, but he's not really talking. And she plans on visiting him at some point because there's something she wants to tell him, and we don't know what that is.
And I never liked you.
But, you know, just the fact
I always hated you the most.
Turn the knife.
But just the fact that she has the courage to go and do that, because most, like, the human reaction would be what Kirito did. Just, I don't even want to know your name. I'm going to forget that this ever happened. You know, after this, I'm never going to see you again. But just the fact that she has the courage to go you know what, I have something to say to him, so I'm going to go do that. And we don't ever get to see that scene, but, like, again, that's very interesting to note.
Yeah. It might show up in flashback later.
Maybe. But anyway, we're running short on time, so after the minister's office, they go down to the Dicey Cafe, where Sinon, or Asada, gets introduced to Liz, who's Ritska? I don't remember her real life name. It's just Liz.
She's Liz.
But she gets introduced to Liz and Asana. And what they they actually did research. And they went down to the place where the shooting took place. And at first, Asada is really angry with them because Kirito has shared her secret. And you know, it wasn't any of their business. But what they do is they let in somebody who's been waiting in the hall, and it turns out it's one of the women who was one of the employees at the post office.
And her four-year-old girl.
No. And her tiny and little, tiny, adorable little girl. And she basically says that she was pregnant during that attack, and that if Asada hadn't done what she did, she would have died. She would have been killed, and that little girl wouldn't be alive today.
Yeah.
And but that means that this shooting was less than 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a long time. I'd assumed it was like, you know, 8, 10 ages, what are they?
Again, kids in anime are usually middle school, high school, early high school. So, you know, and Asada is early high school. So she was still conceivably like 9 or 8 when this happened, even though it wasn't that long ago. But what we have, it's so touching. And I'm not going to lie, I cried. I cried a little bit. I'm not too big to admit that. But this scene touched me very, very deeply. I don't know. What did you guys think? Did you guys cry? I cried.
I was on the brink. I had already been so joyous from previous scenes that I was like, all right, this is exactly what I needed. So it was great. It was super touching, like, and I loved it.
Well, and finally, she's getting a perspective on what happened that isn't her own, I killed a man, I'm horrible, and her mom's trauma, which I'm sure affected her very deeply, because we don't know how mom handled this, and odds are she really didn't handle it well.
No.
And so that'll screw up your kids. So she's finally getting a perspective that's not, you did a terrible thing, it's, I'm forever in debt to you, you saved my life. And this little four-year-old girl walks up to her and hands her a picture she drew of her and her mom and Asada, and you know, the sun is shining and it's nice. You know, it's a four-year-old's drawing, but it's just like...
And we have Kirito basically telling her a lot of the same things that Nurse Aki was saying. You know, some good came out of it, basically. But all in all, I'd say this was the perfect way to end this arc. And I think that basically wraps it up. We're out of time. Do you guys have any final thoughts on this particular arc or just these episodes?
No more
of that.
It's over.
It's over.
He's
now.
He's already playing the music.
And that's just Steven
and the mic.
That's not a bad impression, though.
Yeah.
But any final thoughts, Dari?
I hope that the rest of the series continues in this vein. It's really developed. It's giving you everything that you want, and so I hope that the storytelling continues in this fashion.
More slug monsters.
No.
No. But yeah,
I
agree.
It's good.
I agree. I thought this was like the perfect way to wrap everything up. Folks, thank you so much. We're still going to be covering the rest of SAO as we go into this next arc. So we're very much looking forward to that. Tari Miller, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tari J. That's TauriJay. You can also find me on other assorted panels like The Legend of Korra coming up next.
Katie.
I'm Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at KiaJ. That's KiaXet. You can also find me on Z Nation and Star Wars Rebels.
Steven.
Here, doing a lot of shows.
He lives here.
Pretty much.
He lives here. Let's
and you can follow Liz at Lizzie Maui on Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter at The Menguin. That's TheMenguin. I'm also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. Folks, thank you so, so much for tuning in. We will see you guys next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network.
To watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.